Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is
Mad Yourself a Man.
A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Mad Men
and talk about it.
So happy to be talking to you about Mad Men once again, everyone. Please give us 5 stars and a review on whatever podcast app you listen to podcasts on.
Please.
Crawling over to you. And also give us, give us $5 a month on Patreon, patreon.com/frogcast. And you get to listen to not only these episodes about a week early, but you also get to listen to a bonus episode called The Frogcast, where it's like this, but.
But not about Mad Men.
Not about Mad Men. It's all sorts of subjects. What if we talked about other things? Well, if that's what you're wondering, find out by going to patreon.com/broadcast. And also, this is the second to last episode of season 3, Vince. Did you know that?
I'm so sad about that.
It is sad. We're all going to be sad for a little bit, you know, and
I'm holding space for the times that we had, but also the times to come.
That's right. But so afterwards, we're going to be taking a little bit of a break before we start season 4.
Really short one, though.
Yeah, very short. Let's not promise anything. Could be 6 weeks, could be a year. It won't be a year. But we're all going to be sad for a little bit. Isn't that right, Don Draper?
We're all going to be sad for a little bit.
Oh, my God, he said that in the show. Anyways, thank you all for loving this show so much, and it keeps it going. Today, we're going to be talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 12, The Grown-Ups. It is a very special episode of Mad Men, so we have a very special guest of Mad Yourself a Man, the host of the Hyperfix podcast and the former host of the former podcast, Reply All. Ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, welcome to the pod, Alex Goldman.
Hi, what an introduction. I like the sort of wrestling beat at the end.
Yeah. I really like to amp up the guests right before just so they know what kind of podcast this is.
I really feel like I am not acquitting myself very admirably. I don't think that I sound amped enough. So I'm going to try and get into it.
You look amped, and as long as we know you're amped, then...
Yeah. I mean, judging by the amped energy drink that you're drinking right now, I can only extrapolate how amped you are.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like Popeye spinach, you know?
I think you look very amped. And also, it's unfortunate for our listeners that they can't view the badass keyboard you have behind you, like setup.
There's two back here. Yeah.
Holy shit. What do you do with those? Make music?
I generally, but one of them's not working very well right now, and I don't know how to fix it. And also, I don't make music for fun anymore. I just do it for my podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we relate in that sense. I don't make parody songs of individual episodes of 20-year-old TV shows for fun anymore. I do it because if not, then people don't have a reason to listen.
I understand.
There's all.
I mean, if other. Only you had a show about fixing things, you could like maybe find someone.
That's
to,
right.
Fix that keyboard for you. That other one.
I feel like there's no person in the world less reliable. And like, if I say this to you, once I get to the end of the sentence, you'll be like, "Oh yeah, of course." There's no one less reliable in the world than synthesizer repairmen.
Yeah, you're right.
Out there, they're not sending their best. Those guys are in their own world a little bit.
Yeah,
those
guys have crushed dreams that we don't even know about, you know?
Keytar Bobby is going to be so crushed when he hears the way you've talked about him here today.
Well, I kind of fell into this job after years on the road playing keytar for a Yes cover band. You're right. I can only imagine. But Alex, tell us, this is a Mad Men podcast. Can you tell us what's your favorite advertisement?
So I know that there was in the early 2000s, there was sort of this trend where candy companies were making very odd ads. You know, Starburst had the berries and cream lad.
That's right.
Oh, I love the berries and cream lad.
There's that Skittles ad where the guy, everything the guy touches turns to Skittles.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of cool.
There was a lesser known Skittles ad in, I think, that probably designed by whoever designed the Skittles minus touch ad, which was just like, it's a guy, it's a picture of a nest on a mountaintop and a guy, like a balding guy with a mustache and like a polo shirt, sort of emerges slowly from the nest, and a giant eagle shows up and tears open a bag of Skittles and drops a couple in his mouth. And as it's flying away, the guy just goes, "Thank you. Thank you very much." And as he's saying thank you very much, he starts laughing like he cannot keep it together. And that's the entire ad.
That sounds incredible. Actually, I don't know really if I've ever seen that one. Usually when people mention the ads, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Let's see if I can find it. Skittles.
If you look up Skittles bird ad, you'll find it.
Bird ad.
Oh, you remember the Skittles bird?
Yeah.
There was the Budweiser toads.
There are the Budweiser frogs and then the Skittles bird.
Here we go. There's a rainbow. It's the mountaintop. There's a big nest. Oh, and here's a guy.
Quack, quack.
And he's saying quack,
quack. He quacks too.
Then here's the eagle, tears open the Skittles, puts it in his mouth.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
See the rainbow. Taste the rainbow.
I actually kind of like that ad.
Yeah.
The fact that he like breaks up in it, I find unbelievably charming.
It is incredibly charming. It made me enjoy it. Wow.
I mean, at least he had a reason to. It wasn't like he saw someone dressed like Beavis up there and decided that he couldn't not laugh.
Do we have to relitigate Beavis Gate every time, Vince? Do we always?
Sorry.
Vince,
it's
really.
It's my Kennedy assassination.
Vince really hates that SNL sketch where who was it? Ryan Gosling playing Beavis?
Yeah. Ryan Gosling.
No, the sketch is fine. I just didn't need like 6 months of coverage about like.
It was a lot of
you
coverage.
Know. It was so much coverage.
It was too much. Speaking of JFK assassination, I also need to ask you, Alex, where were you when JFK was assassinated?
I was, I think, 16, maybe 15 years before I was born.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
But,
all right.
You know, I was probably, like, as a concept, I was just chilling. I was probably, like, watching a TV show. Or
my mom always says everyone remembers where they were when Kennedy got shot. And I just figured that meant, like, you would, too, even if you weren't born yet.
Mm. Yeah.
No, I don't have, like, a genetic memory for...
You don't have epigenetic trauma from the Kennedy assassination?
No, it's from other stuff. It's mostly from having Jewish parents.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's also an epigenetic trauma that we all seem to share. But this is not a show about epigenetic trauma. No, this is a show about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song. Mad. Yourself. Man. Madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Mad. Man. Podcast. Those 40 seconds just fly by. All right, ladies and gentlemen.
What we have to do is create a jingle that puts the name of a podcast in our listeners' heads that is not the actual name of our podcast on the podcast feeds. It's really helpful for people trying to find the show.
We are the world's most unfindable podcast, and we thank you for your years and years of dedicated searching. Once again, we're going to be talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 12, The Grown-Ups. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
On the weekend of the John F. Kennedy assassination, Pete finds out that he lost the promotion to Cosgrove. Roger Sterling's daughter's wedding goes off as planned, and Betty musters up the courage to respond to Don's confessions.
Yep, that is what happens. But Vince, I have a very important question.
Go on.
What was happening at the time of this episode? Remember how we do a news segment about what was happening at the time? Let's do that.
Oh, I think what you're trying to say is that we cannot evaluate a period piece divorced from its period context. So we have to put some of that context back in with a little segment that we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
Once again, we're going back. Wait, what's 2025 minus 1963?
I'm not going to do that math.
However many years that
I
is.
I panicked when you said that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, same.
I felt like
same.
I was back in school.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no! Please don't call on me. Yeah, I don't...
62 years? No. Yeah, 62. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Go back 62 years, almost to the day, to November 1st. 1963.
Wait, why are you going to? You're not going to November 22nd?
What? You wrote November? What are you talking about?
This episode takes place on the day of the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, well, I just went back to. Well, we know what happened on the day of the Kennedy assassination.
Okay. That's fine. Fine.
Why would we go back to that day? Everybody knows what happened.
I just figured.
The CIA killed JFK.
Well,
and then they killed Lee Harvey Oswald.
I don't know about all that. I've been hearing a lot of, I've been watching a lot of Candace Owens, and she has some questions about who really killed JFK.
Yeah, I've heard they found trans rule on the shell casings. It was
that's
pretty
right.
crazy. Yeah.
That's right.
We are, listen, if you would have said this before the show, maybe I could have gone back to November 22nd, but that's not what I did. I went back to November 1st, 1963. There was a lot of amazing stories, okay?
Yeah.
Like, you really see the sort of shit getting real, shit getting weird. I think, well, I'm going to the San Francisco Chronicle again, because I do think San Francisco was like ground zero for the counterculture at this stage still.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And so the news stories, you know, they're getting weird. This one, I'd never heard of this before. Indianapolis blast injures hundreds. I just chose this because it was particularly evocative.
I know.
A tremendous explosion during the opening performance of the Holiday on Ice Revue at the Indiana State Fairgrounds Coliseum killed at least 67 persons and injured 385
last
night.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
This is like how when Aaliyah died and everyone was like, oh man, that's crazy. And then like a few days later, 9/11 happened and we all forgot Aaliyah died.
Yeah, this story got Paula Poundstoned.
Yeah. Wait, what? In what
remember
way?
She had the like scandal right before 9/11 happened. You don't remember that?
I don't remember that. So I don't.
It's
well,
such
I don't
a
remember.
Weird scandal too. It was like
child endangerment,
like
right?
Child endangerment, but it was like she was driving in a car. She might have been drunk. It might have been something more insidious, but no. Why do I know so much about fucking Paula Poundstone?
It's like one of those weird Mandela effect stories. Well, I don't even know what that effect is, but like it was. I feel like we all wanted to know more, and then 9/11 happened, and everybody was like, yeah, we don't have the resources to devote
Yo,
to that story.
Paula Poundstone did 9/11.
Yeah.
I think that's a logical conclusion.
Oh, yeah. Qui bono.
Bodies that had been hurled into the air like cannonballs lay scattered on the ice of the arena. Heavy equipment was being moved in to search for others under huge slabs of concrete. A large truck gathered up the mink stoles, billfolds, purses, and clothing thrown around the arena. The blast ripped out a 50-foot section of high-priced box seats. Giant chunks of concrete were hurled into the air and came down on the spectators.
Oh my God.
The finale of the show was being presented, and the entire company of 48 skaters were on the ice. Performance fled out of the way of the falling bodies. Holy shit.
This is insane.
That is quite a story.
Yo, that is crazy. You say 67 people died?
67 and like almost 400 injured.
Holy fuck. And this was all for Disney on Ice or some shit?
Yeah, yeah.
How does that even happen?
I don't know.
Holiday on Ice review. I guess it was a gas explosion.
Fuck.
About 4,500 persons were on hand to watch the premiere when a gas explosion blew up the box seat section and sent bodies flying onto the ice.
God.
Others were buried by mushrooming structural concrete and flaming bleachers.
What the fuck? Yeah, I never heard about this one.
Yeah. Well, I got some lighter news just to decompress from that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Ben Casey flattens SF Night Spot patron. This one has a break in the middle, so I'll have to like move on to the other column in part two. But actor Vincent Edwards, the Dr. Ben Casey of television, slugged a patron who bothered him last night in a North Beach twist club.
Twist club?
Tony Coke Infante, manager of the Condor 300 Columbus Avenue, said the customer, who was about 26, gave Edwards a bad time. Edwards, in town for the International Film Festival, asked him to leave. "I've met Vince before. He's a nice guy," Infante said.
"He would never punch me in the face, not in my own twist club."
He told the kid, "Leave me alone. I'm just like you." The man threw a right. Vince blocked it and hit him right on the kisser, flattening him. "I picked the man up and threw him out," Infante said.
Man, that is, I guess that is a news story. It's really hard to beat the Indianapolis Blast.
It really is. But I mean, these stories are, they're very...
A sitcom star punched a kid.
They paint a picture. They really paint a picture.
Yeah.
This one is just whatever. It's the tone of it is more interesting than the story. Headline, no cheesecake for her.
Oh.
Honey blonde Margarita Voladina, Moscow's most beautiful motion picture star, greeted the San Francisco press corps yesterday at Van Ness Avenue Motel poolside. But Margarita disappointed cameramen. I used to live right by there.
I know. I was going to say that was like your old apartment.
Mm-hmm. But Margarita disappointed cameramen by appearing in conventional attire instead of a swimsuit. She wore a white cardigan sweater with embroidered red flowers, a red skirt, and red sling pumps. A white hairband held down her shoulder-length tresses.
This is a really weird article. It's like a really hot lady just wore normal clothes.
Well, it gets better.
This is what happened before the 24-hour news cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
A hot lady showed up in public and she was wearing civilian clothes?
Yeah, and everyone screamed.
This is before Stars Are Just Like Us.
Yeah, that's true.
She was accompanied by her handsome co-star, Vyacheslav Tikhonov, and Soviet author Sergei Mikhalkov, one of the film festival's jurors. Margarita's cheeks were touched with rouge, her lips with red lipstick, and her hair had a casual quality of disarray. An American Girl spectator commented, "She looks like she combed her hair without a mirror. And that rouge, American girls never use it anymore."
Oh, man. They're just talking mad shit now.
Jeez, what? This sounds like communist propaganda.
I know. This all sounds a little bit to me like that person is like, can we just nuke them already? You know, mm-hmm. This is a CIA operative for sure.
Mm-hmm. Wild sex parties at Harvard barred by college officials.
Oh, no. No, oh, man.
Oh, dang it.
Oh, my wild sex parties.
Yeah, listen how wild these sex parties are. Cambridge, Massachusetts. Wild sex parties at Harvard University, the nation's oldest and richest college, were disclosed Thursday by Harvard officials. College Dean John U. Monroe said visits by co-eds and other women to Harvard dormitories, quote, has come to be a license to use the college rooms for wild parties and sexual intercourse, unquote.
I got to know a few more details about these sex parties.
Under college rules, Harvard men may entertain women in their rooms from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday and from noon to midnight on Saturday. Monroe's disclosure of the parties by, quote, a few of the university's 13,000 students were made in the Crimson. Monroe said he and Dean of Student Robert Waston have been badly shaken up recently by some severe violations of our rules and recent standards of behavior, and the feeling that the college itself seemed to be contributing to an atmosphere of don't care. Trouble has arisen because what was once considered a pleasant privilege, allowing women in dormitories, has come to be a license to use the college for wild parties and sexual intercourse.
Man. What a pleasant privilege we have.
Yeah.
I sure hope no one screws it up with wild sex parties.
Yeah. Listen, if you want to have these super hot co-eds here, you have to read them the Bible. That's the point. Yeah.
I let you let women into the college, and now I find out you repay me by having sex with them?
Yeah, what the hell?
Finally, I just chose this one because it's like one of the most strangely written stories that I think I've ever read. Headline, hexed, dot, dot, dot. So black cat goes on milk at last.
God, there's the way that headlines were written in this time. Sometimes you're just like, I have no idea, but I gotta know.
The cryptic headline is a lost art. I mean, I know like we thought Upworthy invented the curiosity gap, but nope, they had this way back in the 60s.
Yeah.
The black cat, after 14 years of resisting the state liquor department, gave up the ghost early yesterday, Halloween day. It died as a bar.
It's a bar. But— God damn it. This whole time, I mean, don't, I just wanted it to be a black cat, an actual kitty cat.
But later in the day, it was reborn as a new tamed cat, a food and soft drink emporium. The transformation began at 2 a.m. yesterday. Trick-or-treating state liquor agents marched into the famed bistro, 710 Montgomery Street, long accused of being a homosexual hangout, and finally put the hex on it. They lifted the liquor license, climaxing one of the longest legal battles in the state's history.
The problem with this is the liquor makes the men want to fuck each other. So we're going to turn this into milk and soda pop, so they'll never
liquor
forget.
Liquor keeps making these men gay.
Yeah, we can't serve liquor at this bar anymore. There's some sort of magic spell that's making me suck dick every time I drink a Budweiser.
Quote, "We will continue to operate serving food and drinks," said its owner, Saul Stuman. "We'll serve our pussycats milk and fruit juice."
Yeah, then, I don't know, we'll serve them a glass of water, and they definitely won't fuck. We know that. We know that for sure.
The gay sets, traditional Halloween, I guess you still had to put gay in like sarcastic quotes back at this point. The gay sets traditional Halloween costume party went on as usual last night at the new domesticated cat, but it was more of a wake than a bash. The pianist played such somber melodies as Am I Blue, Stormy Weather, and Sentimental Journey as costumed men paraded the length of a runway of tables. There was a young celebrant dressed in the mourning black of the Merry Widow and another swathed as a sheik. He was attended by a friend wearing Arabian garb and guarding his 100-foot-long train that stopped traffic as he paraded along Montgomery Street.
Yo, I think I want an entire movie about this fucking bar.
Dude, it sounds
this is
so
great.
Good.
It sounds
awesome.
Yes. Yeah. It, like, literally, they got their liquor license taken away, it sounds like, because of the fact that it was, like, a gay bar. And then
they were too good at being gay for the time.
Like, yes, yeah. And even in their like, you know, we have to close the bar down. They're like, we're going to close it down in the most fabulous way possible. That is incredible.
As is usual, Police Captain John Engler, commander of Central Station, and 12 uniformed officers kept order among the hundreds who jammed the sidewalk for a glimpse of the gay gala.
He kept order, just walking around with spinning a nightstick, just like just hitting people's dicks in case they get a little bit hard. Like, no, you don't.
Yep. We don't have a sproing sound effect, but
we do not. Brent, add a sproing.
Jamie,
sorry.
I feel like we're properly contextualized. That's the news machine.
So that is what happened literally right before this episode took place. Of course, this episode has its own news story that we're going to be talking about. In fact, the Draper D story for this episode is based on a song that was popular during our JFK assassination, a.k.a. 9/11. Mm. And so, yeah, I'm just going to play a little bit of that now. And most of you won't know what it is, but I don't care. Enjoy. Here we go.
22/11, 22/11. Draper marriage Armageddon.
Do you guys know this song? The 9/11 song? The Building 7 song?
Oh,
it fucking rules. Never mind. I'm gonna keep playing it. I don't give a shit. It is over from this day. Anyone who knows is loving this. With such precision, Benny makes up some fake reasons, but Don Draper wants to win. And Benny's had enough. Conspires with Henry Francis to bring him down. Yeah, bitch. So, for those of you who don't know that song, I don't give a shit, because there is at least one fifth of the audience who knows the 9/11 song about Building 7 is like, yes, I can't wait till the end of the episode to hear it in full.
You know, they're already saying that most people didn't recognize that song, but the four who did all started their own parody song groups.
Oh, man.
They all started their own Mad Men recap podcast.
Dude. That's right. Yeah. We're like the Velvet Underground of parody podcast songs.
Oh, that's right. That is right. So you can listen to that full song at the end. And if you don't know it, look up Martin Stokes' Building 7. You will very much enjoy his song about how fire doesn't melt steel beams. So today we're talking about episode 312. This is called The Grown-Ups, and it is the episode in which JFK is finally assassinated. This is
finally.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, is this like something you've been waiting for a long time?
I've been watching this season, and in fact, for the last like two seasons, you know, there's like every few episodes, there's like a JFK mention, and I'm like, can we just fucking kill this guy already? Right, I'm getting sick and tired of this pre-JFK assassination 60s, because the 60s, I feel like, really gets going after JFK is assassinated. Like, all of this is like sort of a continuation of the 50s up until this point. So
okay, that's totally fair.
Yeah, so I'm very excited for.
We shouldn't have let him justify it like that.
I know. I
can
did
understand
a really
why
good
you're
job
excited for a man to be murdered.
Yeah,
I take back my criticism.
Also, I'm just tired of, you know, I like it when hot guys die. But yeah, so Vince, general,
yeah, they throw off the curve that we're being graded on at all
exactly
times. You know, it helps. Yeah,
I once knew a really hot guy who was good at drawing, and that pissed me off because I was like,
yeah, what the fuck is that about?
I
this
hate,
is as a bald man, I yes. feel like there are so many people where I'm like, you're not even using that hair anyway.
Yes,
like, come on.
Yes, exactly.
If you're going to be like a terrible asshole, I should at least get your hairline.
100%.
Yeah, that's why, what's the Radiohead guy's name?
Tom York.
Tom York. Every musician should be just like Tom York, where it's like, yeah, you should be like good at music, but also like a really
horribly
ugly guy.
Ugly. Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Being like literally disgusting should be a prerequisite for being in a rock band. That's why I hate all 80s like hair metal guys, because they were all way too hot. I don't like that.
There's a couple of really ugly ones in there.
Yeah, I don't know them. So Vince, general thoughts on this episode?
Well, I know how everyone likes my blurbs, so I wrote another blurb for this one. So I'll just read it to you. Close to a perfect episode. This show is essentially about the fracturing of the early 60s conformity and consensus. In this episode, they've specifically tied that to the JFK assassination, kind of the way people always like to tie the end of the optimistic hippie era to the Manson murders. Mm. I wasn't there, but the JFK thing makes sense enough. It's an episode about the way watching one strong institution's crumble can make you impatient for happiness. If the president can just get shot, why wait for personal fulfillment? It's a time for putting aside long-term suburban bliss in favor of extracting short-term dick and pussy while you still can.
Ooh, yummy, yummy.
As they say in earlier episodes, this is America. Figure out who does the job you want and become that person. Only now everyone has become that person already, and so they sort of lost their role models, and now everyone's terrified. likewise, the men only let women handle frivolous things, and now they're stuck with either women they don't consider women or women who only care about frivolous things. Basically, everyone in this story is now some version of Pete Campbell, angry that he got the wrong kind of hot chalky.
That's great. Yeah, I agree with that. Alex, please tell me, this is the first episode. You've seen the show before. This first episode you've rewatched in a long time. What did you think?
I really liked it. I found myself having a strange advantage by knowing that the episode is called The Grown-Ups, because almost every line in this episode is like a childish recrimination that one person is making against another person.
Yes, yes.
So it was really fun to watch it in that context, which I didn't have when I watched it when it was airing on the network. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was really good. I thought it was, I have lived through, I was not, again, I want to just give you guys an understanding of how old I was when the JFK assassination happened. Yeah. I was negative 16, but I was 21 when September 11th happened.
Right.
And I just remember how, I just remember how lost everybody felt and how confused and like vulnerable everyone felt.
Yeah.
And I think they did a good job of sort of embodying that in this episode.
Yeah, it really, it brought me back to the same place, the kind of, it felt like watching the very beginning of 24-hour news cycles, where now news is required at every single moment of this tragedy. People spend the majority of this episode glued to either a TV or a radio, which was very similar, obviously, to after, you know, 9/11, we kind of just never stopped watching news. It it just kind of kept going. In my family specifically, that was the beginning.
That was when
of,
your parents got news pilled?
No, no. It was when we got the TVs back. My my dad took out the TVs when I was in fifth grade because we were getting bad grades, and then we didn't get them back in the house until 9/11. And
holy
so
shit.
Yeah, so 9/11 was pretty sick. Like, it was, you know, bad for the country.
Pretty good for you, right?
Pretty good for the Lieb household. But yeah, just
that must be why you're now such a staunch supporter of Hamas, is because the 9/11 terrorists got your televisions back.
Yes,
it
I was
sense.
Like, I'm sorry, but this is getting results. Show me a politics that gets results, and you have my blessing.
So, how many years were you sans television?
From fifth grade until 10th grade. So however many years that is.
Is this the period where you fucked the Big Mouth Billy Bass?
Yes, it is the period where I fucked the Big Mouth Billy Bass.
Now this is starting to make more sense.
I don't need context. I understand.
No, you get it. Yeah, you get it. Yeah. Yeah, this is, all the context is right there.
He also had a silicone butt that his parents.
That was made. Later. That was later. Okay. All right. But yeah, so instead of watching TV, I just got really into doing weird masturbation. So
you know, sometimes you got to make your own fun, and I'm proud of you.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, hey, back in my day, I used to fuck a Big Mouth Billy Bass, not like going on Twitch like you kids do now. But yeah, this episode. I thought it was, if you're going to be forced into doing a JFK assassination episode, which of course this show was, you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, inevitable.
Yeah. The way that they were able to pull it off in this, I think, was perfect, because rather than it being like existing sort of to the side, or more so trying to like shoehorn other plot lines into it, everything felt very natural because everyone's dealing with what they've already been dealing with. Pete is dealing with this, you know, sharing power with Kenny Cosgrove for, you know, this whole season.
It sort of crystallizes everyone's sense of precarity that they never had before.
Yes. And, you know, Betty is dealing with like being in love with Henry Francis and wanting to leave Don but not knowing how to do it. You know, Peggy is fucking Duck. Not much there, but she does fuck Duck during the assassination, which is fun.
I like that he didn't tell her that the assassination was happening, so he could get a piece first.
That is one of the funniest scenes in this. Was he's just like, he's watching the news bulletin about President Kennedy being shot, and then she hears a knock on the door, turns off the TV, pulls out the plug just in case she thinks.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, I thought him plugging the TV back in was like a good tag to that joke, because it's like, oh, he actually unplugged the whole thing.
Yes.
He didn't just, yeah.
He unplugged it because he was like, I want there to be nothing in the way of this afternoon sucky fucky. And
she didn't want him to, he didn't want her to like accidentally turn the television
exactly
on, which back in that those days was actually way harder than it is now.
Oh yeah, yeah. You had to like fucking you had to charge it up. I don't know how it was.
Well,
back
he didn't
then.
Know how acrobatic the sex they were going to be having was going to be,
right?
So
it could,
it was just a, you know, like a
oh no, I busted so hard it turned the TV on.
Back then you had to turn like a, it was like a Model T, you had to like turn a crank.
Yeah, exactly. You turn a crank, the whole room would smell of gas. it was like starting a weed whacker.
It would make like a whine that would get more high pitched, like the faster. You know. But, and then it would turn on.
Yeah, I love him just being, oh, there's a news story that kind of I keep thinking about, and then he turns it on, and it's the president has been shot in the head, and Peggy's like, what the fuck? Oh, like, I don't know how that's not going to factor into whether or not this relationship is worth it for Peggy. If anything, it's a compliment, I guess. You know?
Also, what if part of your post-nut clarity was realizing that the president had been shot?
You come and go, wait, what? You come and immediately turn back on the TV. Oh, in the head. But yeah, I really loved the way that they were able to do that in this episode, and the way they were able to like thematically tie it into sort of what the Kennedy assassination represented in, like, at least for me, narratively in popular media. But go
yeah,
ahead,
I like your, I agree with your assessment that that was like the day the 50s ended. Like,
right.
That makes sense. I was just thinking, like, if the JFK assassination had happened like today, there would be like the elder TikTok guy doing the TikTok live stream, like, oh, yo, I'm here on the grassy knoll. Oh, this is crazy. Did you you saw that video?
Oh,
right?
Yeah, I think during was, Charlie like, Kirk.
The, yes, like that was the
The like, Zapruder film is just it's Abraham Zapruder just being like, yo, what's up? Follow me on TikTok. He just turns his face to the camera. Oh man, yeah. No, that's true though. That is kind of wild. But yeah, let's talk about it. Let's go through what happens in this episode in terms of structure. This is also one of the rare episodes that doesn't really break down in terms of arc because there's just one overarching thing. It's only at the very beginning do we see the beginnings of a few separate characters' arc. So it's, you know, we've got Pete, we've got Peggy, we've got the Sterlings, and of course we have Dawn and Betty. And we'll start off with them.
To Alex's point, I agree that like everybody in this is like hilariously childish, and it is sort of fitting that we open the episode with
the
most
childish
person in his most childish like mode.
Yes. So we start off with Pete. The opening scene is he's curled up on the couch like a baby in the fetal position because he's cold, which is just so funny because there's a level of helplessness where it's just like, he's like, oh, I have to be in the office, but I'm freezing. And it's like, if it's that cold, leave. It was very strange to me. So he's in his office and his secretary, whose name I don't remember.
Hildy.
Okay. I wrote Wilma.
Close.
Same thing.
Because she kind of looks like Wilma.
She does, yeah.
It's just, people forget how much of a fucking dish Wilma was.
It's because Betty Rubble has always been sort of the object of
100%. Yeah, everyone's she steals the spotlight. Like, ooh, Betty, you know, Betty Rubble, and it's like, dude, have you seen Wilma, the redhead? Oh my god, bro.
Yeah, seriously.
So he yells at her about some hot cocoa that he received, and it is just, I've never seen someone like this is, he does such a good job of playing a little baby. Let me just play that clip right here.
I got your hot cocoa.
It's instant.
It's from the diner. I don't know how you can tell.
You can tell because they use water instead of milk.
Just the
pronunciation. Being an expert on hot chocolate is so perfect.
It really is.
Also,
the most,
like, what kind of spoiled creep is he that he needs to get the milk hot chocolate?
Right.
Like, come on, man.
It's like,
sorry, I'm with Pete on this one. The milk hot chocolate's so much better.
This is the kind of spoiled creep he is.
Yes. He's like a Mancini. But apparently, like, it is just the way he says milk in that. It conveys this, like, oh, Pete was breastfed until adulthood. Like, there's just something about his delivery of the line milk. But it is such a funny line because as soon as, you know, he has it, he immediately apologizes. He's like, damn.
Well, and he's like a 27-year-old man or something like that. And, you know, he doesn't know. He carries himself like he's an adult, but he really doesn't know anything about anything. Like, he's not a connoisseur of anything else. Like, a few episodes ago, he had a cigarette and coughed for about 5 minutes
the
straight.
The entire fucking
scene. But the one thing he's an expert at is, like, hot chocolate.
Right. He's a treats connoisseur.
Yes.
And so Lane invites Pete into his office and breaks the news that Kenny is going to be the one getting, you know, to be the VP of accounts, and he's getting some other lesser thing.
Head of accounts.
Yeah, head of account management versus VP of accounts, whatever.
That was very funny to me because it feels like every office job I've ever had.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Where it's like they changed the title to make you feel better about what is essentially not necessarily demotion in his case, but the non-promotion that
it's like a lateral promotion where he gets no more money and no more prestige, but he's got a new title, which is, like, you know, assistant to the regional manager.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Don't you feel like now there's like an entire there's an entire shadow world that lives on LinkedIn that you sort of
occasionally
only see in passing, but it's like they just have an entire, like, shadow economy where they talk about stuff that I don't understand, and everything's like sort of a teachable moment for themselves.
Yeah, it's like it's you know, vaguely spectrumy when I go onto, like, LinkedIn and just read, like, feeds, and I'll be like, there's a lot of, it seems like it's a lot of people who are just it's like they all ask ChatGPT how to be perfect at job, and they want to share that information with others.
But I don't know. It also feels like it directly shames me because I feel like I spent most of my life doing, like, all of the normal, like, you know, overachiever goody two shoes things that you're supposed to do.
You did?
In school. And and then at a certain point, like, it all broke down, and, like, because I never learned how to celebrate my wins, like, they're all successful and I'm doing, like, a podcast in my bedroom.
Are you trying to say that one cannot be successful and make a podcast?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to believe that. I haven't experienced it personally.
You are experiencing it. You're very successful. Did you hear the 9/11 song?
True.
That's on your podcast, dude.
Yeah, that's a very good. That's a feather.
We're doing
in my cap.
Great. We are. Mm-hmm. Are we doing better than our wives? No, but is the 60s something that happened? Meaning that the women's lib movement made it so we don't have to do better than our wives? Yes, and that's what matters. But Pete is like a proto LinkedIn guy for sure.
Yeah,
where his entire, like, I don't know, resentment that you see kind of just oozing off of him is, I did everything right. And
I mean, he is the perfect incel Elon Musk, like, prototype, where his whole, it's such a vicious cycle when people don't like you because you're trying too hard.
Yeah.
Because, like, it's very hard to get out of that without making it worse. And he's like, I tried so hard, and yet Cosgrove keeps doing this better than me because he doesn't try.
Right.
And he just,
He
becomes.
Price has a great line there where he says something like, you always meet all of your clients' needs. Cosgrove satisfies needs they didn't know they had.
No, he says he makes them feel like they haven't any needs.
Right. Like, which is, you know, I think 100% just a comment on Pete's personality, which is that, like, Pete is someone who does not put people at ease necessarily.
Yeah, he makes others feel awkward just by being himself. And then, you know, Lane such a good Lane scene too, because Lane just is playing him like a fiddle the entire time, where he's somehow like bigging up Pete for like taking it well as a strategy to make sure that he takes it well.
That was very good. Yeah. And then
Pete has the line that's I hope it was a difficult decision.
Yes. My dear boy, it was.
Yes. Oh, yes. I cried and everything. But yeah, it is. It's a great scene because, you know, Lane pulls it off perfectly. And Pete is kind of lucky that Lane, you know, sort of guided him into not having a full blown fucking freak out. And so he leaves and he's just like, you know, he makes eyes at fucking like at Ken Cosgrove, like this motherfucker
who's fixing, he's in the process of fixing a secretary space heater.
Right. He's like just trying to get under her desk so he can install a camera because he's
probably looking under her skirt. Yeah.
He's a fucking psychopath. He comes home and he is slumped down in a bowl and Trudy,
that's such a good bachelor move, is like eating out of like a giant mixing bowl.
Yeah, fuck it.
I remember coming home to see my college roommate eating cereal out of a frying pan because like all of the dishes in the house, like all the bowls were dirtier and he didn't want to clean them.
Absolute baller move.
I just wanted to get out in front of it,
yeah,
and say that you don't have to be a bachelor to eat out of a mixing bowl.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's just efficient. Like, why would you dirty another bowl when you can just go straight from the dish?
I drink milk straight out of the carton, and I don't have any regrets. Just
you
don't
always look over your shoulder to make sure your wife isn't watching.
I always look over my shoulder, no matter what. I'm just like, oh, as long as it's not in front of my wife. And then I had my neighbor rat on me. It was like, yeah, we went to like over to their house, you know, to have dinner once, and she was like, yeah, you know, and then I looked out the window and I saw Matt just drinking milk out of the carton, and I put away my groceries and I came back to get more groceries and he was still drinking out of the carton. I was like, oh, can you shut the fuck up, neighbor? Anyways, Pete tells Trudy that he got fired, and Trudy interrogates him basically it's like, tell me everything, and realizes, okay, he didn't actually get fired. He's just doing the Pete thing of like, you know, if they don't want me to be the fucking, if they don't give me a promotion, they might as well fire me.
Yeah.
That leads to
You're forgetting the part where she's like, you didn't get angry, did you? Like, she's kind of like his mommy, where she's like, you know, you didn't throw a little fit like you usually do, did you?
No, I was good boy. Yeah. So yeah, there's that, and then let's do the beginning of Peggy. Peggy's real easy. Peggy starts. Oh no, it's Brent.
Yeah, before you get to Peggy, we should take a break for some ads.
Fine. You know, he's right. People want to hear advertisements on the show about the people who make them. So let's play some. But don't worry, everyone. We'll be right back.
I used to love my morning coffee until it stopped loving me back. The bloating, the discomfort, it just wasn't worth it anymore. Then I found Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's real coffee blended with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Now I get my morning ritual without the crash or the discomfort. The Black Friday sale is on. Get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, you could win $100 cash or even get your entire order refunded. Head to everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
And we're back. Mad Yourself a Man, world's most fucking Mad Men podcast. And we're here with Alex
Goldman.
This is
the most you swore in any episode.
Am I swearing a lot? I feel like I'm swearing a lot. I'm sorry.
A little bit.
How you doing, Alex? Doing good?
I think that you sound really manly when you do that.
Thank you. Fucking. I feel like a fucking man. So now we're going to be talking about fucking Peggy. Peggy is walking with her roommate to the elevator, which I assume.
Do you have this conversation?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Okay.
I do.
I wanted to talk about this moment a lot.
Yes. It is the most passive-aggressive conversation where they're each kind of slut-shaming each other, but for different reasons. Here's that.
I'm sorry, I'm not as stimulating a lunch companion as Doug. It's Duck.
What's wrong with him?
Nothing. I don't even know why I'm weighing in on men right now. I think it's good that you're being picky finally. Well, there's nothing around but married ones. Ooh. I mean, we can't all throw caution to the wind.
But Duck's not married.
Oh, then why are you with him?
I mean, that's such great writing because, like, I feel like it's very hard to do justice to. You hear those certain conversations where people are like two ships passing in the night.
Sure.
And a lot of times they don't play in fiction very well because, like, they don't necessarily move a plot forward or
a relationship forward.
Yeah, it's sort of like a non sequitur or like a red herring. But here it's like, it's so thematically appropriate and just well written, like from line to line, that you're like, I was like riveted the whole time. And then when it ends, I'm like sort of scratching my head, but not in a way that I'm mad.
Like, yeah. No, I like.
But again, a perfect example of like the contemptuousness that everyone has for one another.
Yeah.
These people have to spend so much time together. They live together and they obviously despise one another.
Yeah, and they've decided that they should be friends for some reason. And it's sort of like everyone in the world can see that you guys have no business hanging out with each other. But
yeah,
it's sort of, I guess it's like the 50s conformity kind of thing where they're like, okay, we know what we're supposed to do and we have to do it, even though it's very obvious to all of us that we hate it.
No, I mean, who doesn't love having a person living with you that you have to justify your life to every single day? But yeah, it is. It's great because, you know, she is being shamed for being with Duck because she's like, well, what possible reason could you have for being with this old man? Then he is married and it's kind of exciting. Peggy gets a call from Duck, who beckons her over to her place to fuck, and Paul notices and says, "Ooh, a nooner," which you know, that's nasty. And
we don't have cool little words like that anymore. Nooner.
No, we don't.
I mean, I bet they do on the fucking, on like TikTok. We just don't know them because we're old.
You know, I went to Australia recently and everyone in Australia, there's like every event you could possibly imagine has some weird fucking,
that's awesome.
Like weird nickname.
And just like the way that they name things in such a way that you're like, oh, why didn't we ever think of that before? Like,
yeah, like
where you sunnies, mate? And you're like, what? You're like, yeah, you sunnies. And I was like, oh, that is such a better word for sunglasses.
Sunglasses.
Why don't we come up with that?
Makes you feel like a nerd saying my sunglasses. Yeah. Well, I can't see because it's too bright in my eyes. Yeah.
But like, instead of saying McDonald's, they say, hey, you want to go to Macca's? And I'm like, yeah we should fucking call it Macca's.
I would rather go to Macca's. So good.
You know what's funny is like they have all those words and then like the one a reverse of this instance is like, hey, can I have the ketchup? And they're like, oh, you mean the tomato sauce? And you're like, what the fuck? You guys,
way
you
too
invented
long.
Sunnies and Macca's and now you're calling it tomato sauce? What the fuck?
Doing everything wrong with that. So then Duck comes, or Peggy comes over to Duck's, and Duck turns off the TV. Okay, now the Sterlings. Margaret is about to get married and she is scared because she's getting a lot of bad signs. Jane took her out to lunch. This is Roger's new teen wife, and gave her some life advice like dress sexy. Her future mother,
you don't want to hear that from someone who's fucking your dad,
dude. I love the parallels between Jane and Margaret and Peggy and her roommate. Like, everyone is like, they're going out together and they just are both hating each other for different reasons. And it's just because, you know, Jane is saying this as a little bit of like an own, like, you know, here's how you keep your man interested. I mean, come on, we know.
By the way, I'm fucking your dad.
Oh,
I've told this story many times, but it always reminds me of when I used to have the job that I hated as a copywriter for College Loan Corporation. And like they would always do like take people out to lunch on their birthdays. And my birthday was coming up and I didn't like anybody in the office to the point that I actually worked in like a separate office that was next to the copy machine, like all by myself. And so when my birthday came around, I of course didn't say anything about it, but then my boss figured it out the next day, where she's like, "Oh, it was your birthday yesterday. We have to take you out to lunch." And everybody, it was a Friday, so everybody was gone except for my boss and me. But for some reason, she felt like obligated to do the take him out for his birthday thing. So we had a sad birthday lunch eating Indian food, even though both of us hated each other.
God, what a nightmare.
Hellish.
Yeah.
This is the most awful, nightmarish story.
By the way, so my first 4 days there, like my boss's boss hadn't figured out what she wanted me to do yet. So I was just sitting in this weird other office next to the copy machine. And so people would walk by my desk to make copies, and they would walk in behind me. I had no job responsibilities at this point. So literally, obviously I'm just sitting there like reading stuff on the internet.
What are you doing? Hiding.
She reprimanded me for like surfing the internet on the job. And I was like, "You literally haven't given me any job responsibilities yet.
To tell me what to do."
Yeah. Like, I'm desperate to have something to do.
Oh man. Yeah, that sounds like a great job. I miss those
days. It
was great.
Yeah. Did I mention I miss the corporate world?
Yeah, man. I just miss going to an office. I just miss Sandy brought in bagels.
Yeah, I miss seeing other human beings.
Oh my God, guys. Can we just make an office and go to it?
You say that, but then when you go to an office that's full of human beings, you're like, boy, don't like human beings.
It's true. Every single second that I worked at my last office job, I wanted to do a terrorist attack on it. But I like the bagels. So Margaret
bagels are good.
Is scared, doesn't want to get married, and I really love the conversation that she has with her mother here. It's great.
I don't want to get married. Everything's pointing to the fact that I shouldn't. And everybody knows. Brooke knows. His mother knows. Do you know what she said to me? She said in India, if the wedding doesn't take place at the appointed hour, they burn the bride.
Just because she went to India doesn't mean she's not an idiot. You're having the wedding. The bride will not be burned. Turn those earrings into a tea service or something.
Aren't you listening to me?
I am, and you're babbling like a little fool. Go to your room.
What?
You heard me. You want to act like a child, I'll treat you like one.
I love it. Immediately after, she's like, "I'll show you who's a child," and calls her daddy.
Yeah.
It is so great. And
there's also some wish fulfillment in, like, when someone is complaining about dumb stuff and you can just say, "You're babbling like a little fool."
Yeah, yeah. Like, you turn, she becomes a little fool immediately.
Yeah.
And yeah, she calls. Go ahead.
So before she calls, well, I guess it's after she calls Roger, but just like the visual of her stomping off like a little child, I enjoyed that at least as much as the conversation that preceded it.
Yes.
It's like a 2 second shot, but she's really doing like the bounce walk.
Yeah, humph. She's saying humph. Yeah, so she calls Roger, who is, you know, yelling at her like, I'll call it off. I don't give a shit. And then she decides, no, I guess I actually do want to get married. And then Roger yells at Jane for taking her to lunch. Is like, you know, why I expressly forbid it, which I love telling your 19-year-old wife, like, I forbid it. Don't talk to my similar age daughter. I love Jane's line, which is like, everything you do is for her. And it's like, it's his daughter. It's like, she's literally jealous of Margaret because they are the same age.
I also, just as a period note, I really enjoy all of the pillbox hats, like the
lots of pillbox hats.
The hats that just stick up like a little box on the back of a woman's head is so it feels so strange at this remove. It just seems like a very, very as inconvenient as like a hoop skirt, like wearing like a weird little box on the back of your head.
It looks uncomfortable.
Yeah, how do you even keep that thing on?
I assume that you put stuff in it, right? Like pills?
I always imagine that you safety pin it to your head.
Yeah, that's what my when I was watching it with my wife, I said, oh my God, how do they keep that hat on? She's like, clips. I was like, oh, okay. It yeah, still well, seems hard.
Like, what do you have to say it like that, wife?
Yeah.
I'm not an idiot. But yeah, that's, she's got the pillbox hat. She's yelling. She runs to her room and slams the door. And he's like, get out. Go away. What are you going to do? Commit suicide?
Yeah, that's the greatest line.
Very strange. What a weird dare.
Yeah.
The Don and Betty scene that happens before the assassination. The baby wakes up in the middle of the night. Betty walks in to see Don is soothing. I related to this scene a lot. Whenever I fuck up or my wife's mad at me, I'm just like, oh me, I'm making breakfast. Yeah, good old indispensable me. Yeah, I very much loved that. And then the JFK assassination. The lead up is basically, you know, duck season on the news. Don goes into Lane's office to complain about needing a new art director, and Lane gets a call that makes him say, what? And Pete complains to Harry about not getting, you know, this promotion. And Harry has the TV on in the background and a special news bulletin interrupts.
It's like Harry is at once like a superfluous character, but also like a really enjoyable character. Just like the guy who's henpecked no matter, like he has a very comfortable position.
Yeah.
But he's just constantly overlooked and exasperated with everyone else.
I mean his whole existence in this episode is him being like, you think you got it bad?
Yeah.
What about me?
Yeah. I got to watch TV all day. Yeah. And that's basically all he says to Pete, was just like, you know, hey, your life doesn't suck so bad. Look at mine, which I can't imagine Pete taking any comfort in, because Pete is just going to be like, well, yes, but I am of pure blood. You are right. Trash.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because like if Ken Cosgrove had Harry's job, I think he would be happy as a clam. And
yes.
He would be in there just like having a martini or something and smiling his big dumb smile.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you
guys
familiar with the concept of Sephiroth posting?
No.
I think it might have been something that Juniper, I used to make Western Kabuki with, who now makes Kill the Computer,
yes,
might have come up with. But the idea is people who, like, when they're angry, they post on the internet like Sephiroth from Lord of the Rings. they talk in sort of like these big, these like, they talk like they are about to commit some kind of vile act, and yes, they use sort of bit flowery language.
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like Pete is the Sephiroth poster of Mad Men. Maybe the original Sephiroth poster.
Yeah, I think, like Sephiroth posting feels like the cousin of vague booking, which is like when your relationship's bad and so you post like a really cryptic status update with like song lyrics on it or whatever. Which I think that was Torio van Grohl.
Yeah, he did.
Named it Vague Booking.
Vague Booking, just like it's got an Eckhart Tolle quote or whatever.
Yeah. They start quoting Rumi and you're like, oh man,
something's happening. I'm not going to ask what though.
Yeah, I refuse.
So Kenny and a bunch of people run into Harry's office. It's the only room with the TV, and they all watch the news about JFK. And from this point on in the episode, the storyline is just very chronological. So Dawn shows up, sees that the entire office is crowded around a TV and no one's answering the various phones that are ringing. And he's like, what's going on? What the hell?
Yeah. I mean, he walks into a weird scene.
There. He does. And when no one answers his question of what's going on, he has this look of panic on his face where he's just like, but usually people answer me when I talk. For a second, I think he's like, am I dead?
Because
he's, he's so hot that like,
is this purgatory?
No, he's hot and he's scary and he carries a lot of weight in the office. So for him to yell that and no one turn around, there was just a moment.
Yeah, I mean, this is the moment where Don realizes that his prestige has been inexorably damaged.
Like
between that scene and then
Betty,
there's the moment he's dancing with Betty and he's like looking at her and he's just like, wait, why aren't you obsessed with me still?
Yes, that's so true. That's very true.
And I mean, I guess that's sort of like, you know, the death of that 50s style man, where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, I don't carry unquestioned authority anymore. What happened?
Yeah. Betty is at home watching the news, and Carla shows up asking for an update. And it's right at the moment where they find out that he is dead, and they both cry. And Sally goes over to her mother and comforts her. And I was just like, oh, I love you.
Sally also is the only person in this episode. She displays like wisdom beyond her years at every in like the couple scenes she has.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't want to skip too far ahead, but, you know, Don and Betty have a fight.
Yeah.
And then the next morning, they are not making eye contact with one another or acknowledging one another. And there's so much attention paid to how much Sally notices this and chooses not to comment on it, which is like an incredibly mature thing for a 9 or 10 year old to do.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it falls in line with sort of the way in which Sally's character has been treated and the way that she is developing, which is that she is understands that the grown-up world has a lot of drama, and she may not fully understand what's going on, but she knows that she kind of has to be the grown-up a little bit sometimes. And so, you know, her comforting, you know, her own mother is like a big example of that. Peggy asked Duck if he gave her a hickey, and then they turn on the TV and the president's dead.
I'm sorry, I'm skipping ahead here too.
No, please skip ahead.
So we get the actual footage of Oswald getting shot by Jack Ruby.
Yes.
And Betty's watching it live, and I could I feel like her Minnesotan-ness really came out in that one line. I guess she's from South Dakota. I just looked it up, but where she's like, "What is going on?" And I'm like, "Oh, that is definitely a North Midwesterner."
Oh,
right there.
Interesting. Like January Jones is.
Yeah, January Jones. What is going on?
I love it. You just like, for you get a tingle in the back of your neck when you hear someone vaguely Midwestern. You just go, "Gross."
Yeah, I mean, I think it's partly like my grandma was born in Saskatchewan, so she has that same kind of accent. So like, you get like that weird inkling of long forgotten memories all of a sudden.
Sure. I also like that in terms of the Jack Ruby Oswald thing. You see Betty see it live, and you see Trudy and Pete watching it in super slow-mo. And I was just like, oh man, it very much felt like, you know, I don't know, an allusion to sort of the 9/11 24-hour news coverage, to the way in which, like, how many times am I gonna watch this plane run into a building? And the answer is as many times as the CIA.
I mean, I remember
those
couple days after, it was like anytime a new angle came out, they were "Well, we got new footage."
Yeah, check this out. The plane did it again, but this time from under. Yeah, and I'll admit, like I do sometimes like go on YouTube and go rare 9/11 just to see if there's an angle I haven't seen yet. I don't know why. Just, you know, sometimes you just want to know. Jane, the absolute funniest moment in the season is, you know, because we're going from person to person, you know, all finding out that JFK has been shot. And then it cuts to Jane in a wedding dress crying on the floor, watching the news. And she goes, "It's ruined. It's all ruined."
No, isn't that Margaret? Because Jane.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Yeah. Margaret. Margaret in a wedding dress on the floor. "It's ruined. It's all ruined." Just, I fucking love her being right about her premonition, where she's like, all things are pointing to I should not get married. And her mother's like, "No, what are you talking about? This is fine." And then JFK gets shot the day before.
And she's like, "Once again, this is all about me."
Yeah, yeah. Don comes home, hugs Betty, and tells her to take a pill and lie down. Gotta love a nice 50s man.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells his kids that everything's going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. There's a new president who's even better because he will show those damn North Vietnamese what time it is. And then he starts grunting and chanting USA. The next day, Betty is watching the news about Oswald, and Dawn is telling her to get ready for the Sterling wedding. That's right. The wedding is still happening, which is such a funny choice. Like, to,
but also, yeah. Pete's like, I'm not going.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Pete invents virtue signaling in that moment, I think.
Yes. Yeah, he does.
Do you have a clip of that?
I do. Pete and Trudy both make a stand.
Have you been drinking?
The whole country's drinking. They'll never cancel. You know why? Because they're happy. You should have heard some of the things people said yesterday.
Like what? What did they say?
Man made a lot of enemies. Things like that.
That's awful. I don't care what your politics are. This is America. You don't just shoot the president.
Harry Crane was looking at his paperwork, calculating how many commercials weren't going to be aired. I'm not going. You can go and say I'm sick if you think it's that important.
No, you're right.
I love every moment of that scene. Not only just is Pete like sort of making up like a self-righteous reason not to go, the real reason is I didn't get a promotion. I fucking hate these people. Why would I go? But I also love the sort of, I don't know, the proto Charlie Kirk conversation that they're having, where it's like, you can't start talking about a man when he's died. You know, I mean, obviously Kennedy and Charlie Kirk are very different, but just the idea of like
similar conversation.
This is America.
Sure.
We don't just shoot the president. It's like, well, everybody else?
What about those many presidents that have been killed?
Right. Yeah.
Not that long ago.
This is America. If we're going to shoot the president,
we kill your president.
Yeah. We kill your president. Exactly. But yeah, I just love it. And I love that she agrees. She's like, you know what? Fuck it. You're right. Like,
yeah, she's got his back on.
She's such a ride or die. Trudy, yeah. I am fucking team Trudy all day. Mm-hmm. She's the best. So
yeah, if we're doing a Mad Men F. Mary kill, it's going to be Mary Trudy all day long.
Of course, dude. It would be Mary Trudy kill, well, F. Joan probably, you know? Because, I mean, Christina Hendricks. Kill Pete. Can I add a man in there?
Sure, why not?
Okay. No one else has to do it.
Just me. Hang on. I was letting you go out on that limb.
Yeah.
On your own.
I mean, to be honest, you don't have to either.
No, but I do, and I did. You know what? Kill Bobby. What is
Bobby?
Bobby Draper?
Yeah, the little boy.
Sure. Why not?
Sure.
I don't know. I'm done with him. Sure. What do you even bring to this show? I don't mean that, Bobby, if you're listening to this
podcast.
Yeah,
we have to let people know that you're not a misogynist by explaining that you will kill a little boy.
I'll kill a little boy to be a feminist.
There were how many Bobbies? There were like four. So you're pissing off four kids right now.
Oh,
like,
man.
Kill them all. I'm sorry. I don't mean
kill them all and let the casting director sort them out.
Okay. So at the wedding, the seating chart has been readjusted to make up for all the no-shows. Dawn basically is like, come on, Betty, we have to go, you know, for appearance's sake. And, you know, Betty is just like, I am very much done with being your appearance. Roger tells the people to eat both of the entrees, because they have the food.
Boy, they're having prime rib and sole. Like,
oh,
I want to go to that wedding.
God, I want to go to that.
Seriously?
Wedding. Oh, dude. So
I've never been to a wedding with prime rib. Boy,
dude,
I wish I had been to one.
I'm about to go get prime rib on Thanksgiving. My fucking family insisted that we go to Lowry's.
Mm.
And I was like, okay. I mean, I like to make, I'll make it. And they said, no, your cousin's coming from out of town and he's going to pay for it. It's all very Jewish. And then they could only get a reservation for 11 a.m.
Oh, wow. So that's early for prime rib.
Yeah,
sure.
It's got a little bit early for prime rib, but...
I've never been to Lowry's, only House of Prime Rib, who everybody says is like Lowry's. And I have a hard time believing that Lowry's could be as good as House of Prime Rib.
It is,
but you can
even
go and
better
find out for me.
It is so good. Oh, I've been to Lowry's a bunch of times. It's so good.
I don't believe it.
No, it's very good. It used to be across the street from the Tony Roma's, which is, of course, the best place for ribs. Mm-hmm. At the wedding, a person is sitting at the table talking about how we can get over our grief. And he compares it to when FDR died. Here's that.
3 months after Roosevelt died, we bombed Hiroshima. That's how we got over it. I say we hang Lee Oswald and then we take care of Texas. Hell, the whole South.
What did everyone think of the sweetbreads?
God, they had sweetbreads too? Was this like my dream wedding?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, it has everything that I would want at a wedding right now. A prime rib, a sweetbread, a dead president. Just kidding. Just kidding. Joke.
I mean, I liked his idea that when Kennedy died, we should have nuked the whole South just because.
That's very northern of you, Vince. Mm. Henry shows up with a hot woman, and Betty looks and is all like jealous, and then she turns out to be his daughter, and she's like, whew, that was close. Jane is in the kitchen with Kenny and Bert, and everyone's watching Oswald on TV. Roger gives his speech, gives a shout out to Mona. There's a lot of like sweet moments between him and Mona in this episode where you kind of realize like, you know, even Roger maybe realizes he made a terrible mistake because they're just so compatible, you know.
Well, he's, you know, he's doing the downside of sexism is that you end up with a frivolous woman.
That's right. He gives a very sweet speech and they dance to Moonglow by Benny Goodman. Great song. And then
got the great moment where Betty leaves the party, and then we got the shot, probably one, like one of the more famous shots of Mad Men, I'm assuming.
Are you talking about?
There's the two shot of Dawn in the foreground and Henry in the background.
And she's walking toward them. Her eyes are on
Henry.
Henry the whole time, but then she sort of walks into Dawn's arms.
Yes. It's very
I didn't realize that Henry was kind of a short king until this episode, and
I appreciated that. He's got one of those like bodies where it's like you just can't tell how tall he is, but then once you kind of see, you're just like, oh yeah, he's a little guy, very very sweet, very very hot, you know. He's one of those.
But that was
kind of
in the 60s. I feel like that was, you know, Kennedy was kind of one of
those. Was Kennedy little?
I mean I don't think he was like a tall guy. He's Irish. I don't know.
The tallest president was what, Lincoln? And he was ugly as sin?
Yeah. People say he might have had more fans.
More fans? I wish I had more fans of this podcast.
I got to go.
More fans.
I'm kidding.
I know you're kidding. No one wants to go. Everyone wants to stay. So, Henry looks at him and Dawn and Betty, you know, have this like kiss, right after he says, everything's going to be fine. And Betty's like, how do you know? And he's like, how about this? And he kisses her.
Yeah,
and
he says, "I want to marry you," which is like, "Wow, buddy!"
Oh, that's what Henry says.
Yeah,
no, I was talking about Dawn and Betty.
Oh, sure.
Were you still thinking about that more fans joke?
I was. It really got me.
That kiss is like, you know, one of those moments where he thinks, "Well, this is going to be the most assuring thing I could give to this woman."
Yeah, everyone wants to. I can seduce anyone, and then his powers have just evaporated.
He has no idea that this did not work on her at all. Betty is watching TV and sees Oswald get shot, and you know, screams out in Minnesotan or South Dakotan. Betty wakes up Dawn and tells her she's going to go out for a drive to clear her head. And it's a secret rendezvous with Henry. And in that conversation, Henry seals the deal by doing, you know, the thing that a, you know, well-bred woman like Betty Draper needs, which is a marriage proposal.
They're Great Gatsby-ing really hard, I think.
What do you mean? You know?
Just they're trying to, they're like, you know what, how we can recapture the 50s is if we just do it harder and more. Like we must act waspier in this moment. That's how we can fix this. Is
our upper lips must be stiffer.
Yeah, like instead of having like an affair where they like, you know,
it can't be tawdry. Sucky, yeah,
yeah, it can't be tawdry. He's like, what if I do like a grandiloquent proposal? Like, yeah, you know, we're in a Victorian novel.
What if something. We wear gloves and speak in British accents?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what she requires, and I think
100%.
It's what he wants to give her, and he even says like, "Oh, I wish I could take you to a movie." Like he's like, "Oh, gee, golly, Willikers, you're so keen," and it's like, "You guys are both adults." Adults and cheating. Well, I guess Betty's cheating. So yeah, then they kiss and she...
I'm so confident in the milk that I'm just going to buy the cow.
That's right. Yeah. You know. Look at it. That's a fuckable cow. So yeah, Betty immediately, you know, is able to compare kisses, comes home and gives Don the news.
I mean, another great shot is just her walking in looking like 60s woman from like a catalog. Like,
yeah, I know.
I mean, she just looks
with like a glowing Terminator eye.
She's perfect. Like she's got the perfect overcoat and then she takes the overcoat on and she somehow has like a perfect unruffled scarf underneath the overcoat that is also like over a matching dress. And you're like, wow, okay.
She's
you
like,
you know, how's it get better than
she's
that?
She's coordinated.
Yeah,
for this conspiracy of cheating, you know, like it's like she knows. Again, it was like in the previous episode where she gets hot so she could confront Don with the box of all of his secrets and Don doesn't show up and she just loses all of her steam. Like she knows how to put on a fucking show. Mm-hmm. And Betty tells Don, you know, what it is. And I have that clip right here.
I want to scream at you for ruining all of this. But then you try to fix it and there's no point.
You're very upset. I understand. But it's going to pass.
I don't love you.
Bets don't. You're distraught.
It's true. But I don't love you anymore. I know that.
Stop it.
I kissed you yesterday. I didn't feel a thing.
You'll feel better tomorrow. Going past it. You'll see.
You can't even hear me right now.
You're right.
You're probably just on your period. Have you tried taking another pill?
Yeah. Honey, you sound hysterical. Can we do electroshock therapy? Look at how hot I am. Look at me. I'm hot and I dominate. But it doesn't work.
Nope.
She can't.
50s are over, man.
50s are over, dog. Like, Kennedy is dead and his assassin is dead. The fucking CIA mission accomplished. You got your war in fucking Vietnam. You got your Cuban. I don't know, man. I don't even know the conspiracy theories. You got the USS Liberty done. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, you grassy knoll guy. Anyway.
Did you know that. Jim Morrison's dad was like one of the main guys who did the Gulf of Tonkin thing.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I heard about that recently too. He was like, Jim Morrison's dad was somehow involved in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah, he was like a major Navy guy who was like directly involved in like
in the false flag.
Yeah, creating the Gulf of Tonkin incident. Yeah,
that's crazy. I love it that both he and his dad were very good storytellers.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he probably was
they called him the Lizard Admiral.
Very good. This is my dad. My only dad. That's stupid. So yeah, the next day, Betty is making breakfast for the kids. Dawn is leaving for work. Sally notices the tension between her parents. Peggy goes to the office. Dawn goes to the office. She's working on Aquanet, and we see why. The art that they have for it is essentially the Zapruder film. You know,
it's like at the exact angle as the Zapruder film.
Right,
it's a bunch of people wearing bonnets and riding in a convertible.
Yes. And it's so funny because I realize this is the second time that a Kennedy-related tragedy has ruined one of Paul Kinsey's pitches, because Paul Kinsey also did the Everyone Wants to Be a Marilyn or a Jackie ad campaign that never went forward because Marilyn Monroe died of an overdose. And now his other pitch, you know, the Aquanet fucking convertible idea, is also totally fucked. The Kennedys have destroyed his fucking every creative output he's had. It's very funny.
George S. Morrison, who commanded the fleet during the Gulf of Tonkin incident that led to the escalation of the Vietnam War, and whose son Jim was the lead singer of The Doors, died November 17th in Coronado, California. Aboard the flagship carrier Bonhomme Richard, Mr. Morrison commanded American naval forces in the Gulf when the destroyer Maddox engaged three North Vietnamese torpedo boats on August 2nd, 1964. A skirmish and confused reports of a second engagement 2 days later led President Lyndon B. Johnson to order airstrikes against North Vietnam and to request from Congress what became known as the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution, allowing him to carry out further military operations without declaring war.
Wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
My dad also did that.
Yeah.
Dang. My dad, no wonder you're so successful.
My dad set the Reichstag fire. He did it. Yeah.
My dad did 9/11.
Oh, look at that. We all are Nepo babies here.
You know, remember Building 7?
I do.
That was him.
There's a song about it that you should have known.
Okay.
So the episode ends with fucking Don Draper, he's drinking and he's alone, and Peggy's also there. The end of the episode. Okay. Final thoughts. Is there a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we didn't talk about that you want to talk about, Vince?
Oh gosh, I know it's not the most sophisticated joke in the episode.
Oh God, I know exactly what you're gonna say.
When Peggy calls Duck and she's like, I'm gonna go to lunch with Kurt and Smitty, he's like, ditch those homos.
He just straight up says doesn't he say they're a couple of homos?
Yeah, no, he says they're a couple of homos,
which is like I think half true, because
only one of them. Well,
Kurt is, right?
Smitty's not out.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right. It's probably both of them. But yeah, mm-hmm. I love that Duck just throws in a little casual homophobia. Alex, a favorite scene that you want to talk about, or a least favorite scene you want to talk about, or something that we missed?
I really just loved the way that everyone was crowding around the TV. It really felt, it felt like the 1960s version of what we just do all day every day now.
That's really true.
Which is just like constantly ruin our brains with a feed of tragedies, and then occasionally look up from our phones and be like, hey, did you hear so-and-so died? Oh, holy shit, the IDF just killed 16 right. children.
Be like, hey, and now we don't even do it in a crowd of people. We're alone watching it and going, like, texting our other lonely friends. Oh, it's so much worse now. But yeah, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and I do, you know what? I think I'd give it a B+. Vince, what would you give this episode?
I mean, like I said, one of the best Mad Men episodes. Just a very incredible episode of television, which probably puts it up there, you know, in the running for best TV episode of all time. So based on all of that, I'm going to say solid B+.
Oh my God. What? Crazy. Alex Goldman, if you had to give this episode a letter grade, what would you give it?
Well, having not visited the show in quite a while, it was really interesting to reconnect with it. And like, you know, I felt a little dropped into the middle of it, but it was a strong outing, and I feel like, it made me want to go back and listen to others. And I sort of feel like this one is a B+.
What the fuck?
Wow. Woo.
Oh my God, guys.
A coup. We're all in agreement.
We're at yes, yes, yes. Mm. Oh, that's right. It is a solid B+ episode of Mad Men and a solid A++++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Alex Goldman, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and talking Mad Men with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun, guys.
Absolutely. Where can people find you and plug your work, please?
I make a podcast called Hyperfixed, where I solve listener problems and turn it into a little story.
Oh, I love it.
It's very good. You guys should listen. He puts, they put so much more effort into that show than we put into this one. So,
This week's episode actually is kind of a banger. We've got, Claire Saffitz who makes, she reverse engineers pastries and desserts. Mm-hmm. We have a listener who came to us and said, hey, our favorite bakery shut down and we used to get this one cake for every holiday and I've been trying to get it again and like make it myself and it's been a year and I'm worried that we're never going to get it again and I'm freaking out. And so we brought in Claire Saffitz as a hired gun to help us recreate a pastry from a closed bakery.
I love that.
You can find the show and social media on all social media at Hyperfixed Pod, and the website is hyperfixedpod.com.
Yes, and the website will be in the show notes. Please listen to Hyperfixed. It is a really great show. Alex, thank you so much for coming on our show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping, squeezing, broken 60s.
Patreon.com/broadcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. That's right. You get a prep school name from the one and only prep school name master, Vince Mancini. And Vince, we have three names this week. And one of them is someone who emailed and said, I have fallen through the cracks. Help me. Yeah, which is appreciated. If your name is falling through the cracks, we want to know because we want everyone to get their shout out.
I think I already called the last guy who fell through the cracks the queef, so I won't use that again.
Yeah, don't use the queef again. Thank you, thank you. But our first name, the man who fell through the cracks, Seth Pruder, who also goes by Apes Aplenty. I'm not sure which one he wanted shouted out, so I'm going to say Seth Pruder.
Seth Pruder, today is your lucky day. That's right. I'm saying, okay, come, Pruder. We're going to call this guy Radiohead.
Oh, yeah. That worked. That worked.
Okay, come, Pruder.
Yes.
You guys get it.
No, I get it.
You saw what I did.
Yes, I love it. Come, Pruder. Come. Okay.
Well, Compruder, kill Flanders.
Yeah, there it is. Compruder. It's just a computer that comes. Oh, man. So,
I got some problems with my computer.
Oh, my computer. My computer keeps gooning. That'd be funny every time a computer's processing. You're just like, it's gooning again. Okay, two more names. Next is David Anderson, a $20 patron.
Oh, I better give him an extra good prep school.
Yeah.
In this economy, $20?
Oh, my God.
David Anderson, Danderson. We call this guy the fop.
Oh, the fop.
He's waving around his little handkerchief when he's happy. That's what he likes to do.
He likes the chocolate cocoa that's got the milk in it. You know, because he's sort of foppish. You know what I'm talking about?
From the
episode that we just did.
Oh, like Pete Campbell.
Why can't you ever just yes and me?
Yeah, no.
Why can't you ever just do that? It's so easy. Even if you don't understand, I just say yes and.
I was trying to yes understand.
You were trying to yes understand. That's not never yes understand. Only yes and. And last but not least, we got a lady.
Hubba.
A ladies man, remember Tim Meadows?
Yes, I remember the ladies man.
Very funny. And a very nice person. I love Tim Meadows.
Really?
Oh,
Tim Meadows is excellent in everything that he's ever
been in. And he's a very nice guy, too. We worked together at the Sacramento Punchline, and he was hilarious and humble. Anyway.
Love that shirt in a can sketch. He does such great work in that
sketch.
He does such great work. Ow! The stinging lets you know it's a shirt.
Mm-hmm. 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 Anyways, we have a lady.
It's a good sketch. You know what? I remember things. This is a podcast about remembering things. So
is it?
You're not going to stop me from remembering
things. That's true. That's true. You can never stop me from remembering. I don't care how much Alzheimer's you give me, CIA.
That's right.
Okay, we have a lady.
These nuts.
God damn it. All three ladies who listen to this podcast are going, is it me? Yes, it is you, Natalie Cullen.
Ooh.
Cullen all cars. Beep, beep. We're calling this one the policeman woman.
Oh.
This is why I don't do it. You do it.
She's just culling all the chaff. We call this one the scythe.
Well, that's way better than the policeman woman.
I was going to go, you know, I almost went Twilight with it because, you know, that's about
Edward Cullen. Yeah, of course.
And Bella Swan.
Oh, but what
Very
did you
Mormon
say?
Names.
The Scythe?
The Scythe.
Oh, man.
She's taking out the trash.
I love it. We got to get that wheat. Someone get me a scythe. Hello, death. Anyways, all of those are great and equal. And thank you so much to all the people who signed up for the $8 tier. If you want to hear your name, patreon.com/frogcast. $8 tier or more gets you a shout out. If you haven't heard your name, frogcast@gmail.com. For all your questions, comments, and concerns, Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at all. There's a million reasons why Betty would leave him. There's a million different lies not said to you. I don't love this you. Is a very niche Draper thing. If you don't know, it's not funny. Lane tells me he don't need a second hand man. And Peggy lets Doc shoot from her grassy knoll. Roger's yelling at his wife. What are you gonna do? Commit suicide. I'm just letting the song play if you haven't heard it. Added to a year before that day. And I want to make clear I'm not a truther, it's just a good song. In order to proceed, a modern day Pearl Harbor would be. Fell with such precision, free for speed.
stuff. I made that clear enough. So now it's up to us to bring him down.
Mad Men on AMC.
Sucking on my dick because my dick feels dicky. Eating on my shit because my shit is sticky. Fucking on a butt because I nut butt butter. I know that I'm a dad. I'm a motherfucker. Eat the piss. Eat the piss. Eat the piss. Eat the piss.
Eat the piss. Eat
the piss. Eat the piss.
Eat the piss. This is all ending up in the episode.
Eat the piss.
Somewhere.
All right, Vince. When I say eat the piss, you say eat the piss.
Eat the piss. Eat the piss.
Eat the. I love how you didn't even. You were taking a piss.
Eat the piss.
Gay. Sorry. Why'd I ruin it?
Racial slur.